This is Norman B's Life Elsewhere, the show about art, media, and culture.
Hello there. Welcome to Life Elsewhere. I'm Norman B. Coming up, my conversation with the musician I've wanted to chat with since she first came to my attention with Throwing Muses. That was, well, quite a few years ago. Kristen Hirsch is my guest for the next 60 minutes. And you need to know, what you're about to hear are moving and honest thoughts and words of a talented woman, a mother, a person who unabashedly allows her happiness to reach through the airwaves. So listen carefully, because you're going to be captivated by Kristen. At times, expect to share some of the emotions she expresses so readily. To begin, here's a track from her new album. It's called Possible Dust Clouds, and the cut, Loudmouth. What a great piece of music that is, from the brand new album Possible Dust Clouds. I love that title. From Kristen Hirsch, that one was called Loudmouth. And lo and behold, the lady herself is on the telephone. Kristen, welcome to Life Elsewhere.
Thank you.
What a pleasure it is. You just told me just before we started talking that you're in a barn. You said you record in a barn. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's a, well, it is a recording studio, but it's in a horse stable. So if you're a headphone person, you have probably heard horses on my records, which they don't neigh and whinny like, you know, yeah, here they do. They have a huge chest cavity, so
sure.
it's kind of a rattling barrel sound. But just in case you were wondering what that is, it's not your busted headphones. It's my horses.
Do you ride? Are you a rider?
No. They're not really my horses.
Oh.
They're like little girls riding around in circles.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was just kind of imagining you doing a sort of little trot around the course there, but no, okay. All right.
Yeah, no. I'm a little too white trash.
White trash.
Barefoot on a donkey is more my style.
There you go. Possible Dust Clouds. I love the title. It's your brand new album. I was looking back before we got you on the telephone. I was looking back through your catalog, and I was thinking to myself, how is it possible that you've made so many records over such a period of time, and all of them are so enjoyable? I really was curious to know from you, if you can sort of go back in time and remember when you first went into a recording studio.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like it at all. I ended up running away, actually. I was a teenager. I was pregnant with my first son. And I was being asked to tear the limbs off of my songs and sew them back on and create a Frankenstein version of something that I had assumed was alive.
Yeah.
And so this process turned me off to the point where I couldn't bring about a real song. Its parts were dead. And I left in the middle of the night. I just took a bus.
Oh, goodness.
And
yeah.
The old movie star, Betty Hutton, who was like a Judy Garland
yeah.
back in her day, she and I went to college together. I went too young to have any friends, and she went too old to have any friends. So we used to hang out. I took a bus to her house in the rain, up wet and pregnant, and said, I'm not going to do this to music. Music is as close to religion as I'll ever get. And she said, fulfill this one commitment, and then we'll talk. So she drove me back to the studio. And that day, I could make songs happen. So our first record, though it is unfinished, I was real in my performance, and you know, it sounds psychotic to me. I find it unlistenable, but I know I wasn't lying. And I was just going to leave it at that. But I didn't. I released it, and then, you know, you want to be nice, and life happens, and you're on the road. And then I realized, well, it's not music's fault that I can't work this process yet. So over the next few decades, I learned to work this process to the point where it's my palette, and I'm obsessed with the gravity of the studio, the ability we have to capture something that is, in essence, a sort of hover body that you have to, it has to remain suspended with our help.
Yes.
From the musician to the engineer to the listener. We're sort of holding something up that is extremely ephemeral and can escape at the smallest lie. And I like that challenge now.
Yes.
You know, horses notwithstanding.
What a great explanation. And I'm thinking, looking back, what a great piece of advice that was, because you've lived by that ever since, it sounds to me. And you know, you just said something which I think is so important, and that is the rawness that you had at the time in that first session in the studio, which I think comes across in all of your recordings. There's a sort of earnestness, there's a truthfulness that comes across. And having seen you live, it also comes across, of course, in your live performances, which then leads me to ask you, Kristen, if recording is different to being live, and obviously I know the technicalities of it are, but you seem to put the same verve, the same energy into both. Can you talk about that?
That's a lovely way of putting it. I think what I got wrong when Betty told me to fulfill a commitment was thinking that it was somehow in a record company sphere. It's simply not. Music is a spontaneous human impulse. It doesn't care about us. It certainly is almost nowhere in the music business. It's like breathing, but it's a breathing that we can share, that's a hyper-vivid reality, not metaphor, not the only resonance we're looking for is for it to be as hyper-vivid as we truly are when we're engaged. So my commitment really was to music itself, and raw is a good word to use. All my favorite people are raw, and again, they're not in the music business. There's not much raw there. It's not asked for because it's not particularly marketable. But if you know how in Australia they have a map with Australia at the so-called top?
Yes.
Just to remind you that you are not life's protagonist. We're character actors. Just keep turning your map upside down. And my map is music and music business. The enthusiasm for sharing is valid. We're social creatures, and music should live the way you have a child. You don't want to lock him in a closet.
Right.
You want him out in the world, yeah. But you want him healthy and safe and good. You want him good-hearted, and you got to be raw. So the music is raw, and I have to be raw, and the listeners have to be raw.
Yeah.
And the whole process is devoid of gloss, of shine, of anything truly marketable. So I've set myself up absolutely as a failure in the music business, which is the only way to be a success in music itself.
You know, you just said, you've said it on now a couple of occasions, you said two words, which I wanted to talk about with you anyway, because I have a feeling it's really important to you. And those two words are the biz or the business, or we could sort of make it the music business. And there's something about saying that that I kind of shy away from it because it makes me a little uncomfortable. Having been around the biz or the music business for many, many years, I know the ins and outs quite well, and I know that you do. And it is a business, and there's some horrible parts to it. But I'd like to hear from you just the sort of your take on how you approach the biz.
I leave it. I circumvent it. There are good people trying to share music.
Yeah.
I know that you know that. There's good radio, there are good musicians, there's good management, good record companies, good record stores, obviously. There are good people. So that is in place, and it's fragile, and it ebbs and flows. So you can't even rely on that.
Yeah.
So when I say circumvent it, I mean it. It can't possibly be about something that goes beyond the raw, beyond the immediate. But we're a social species. We do things with empathy when we're right-minded. And if I am living these stories to be able to tell them, to let music use me, I'm going to say conduit. I know that sounds awful, but
no, yeah.
I'm not a conduit for art or God. I'm a conduit for these particular songs. And I can play them in a garage and I'll be happy. But so far, there have been people who treat them like medicine. And I work to refine my audience for that reason, because I will not play the dumbing it down game. I will not turn my back on women. I will not turn my back on music. And so I cannot be a woman in the music business yet. And that's okay. I'm a woman in music instead. But as you know, it is an entertainment industry for one. And I knew I was being shunted into an entertainment industry. I didn't realize it was a fashion industry and only a fashion industry. And that anyone who is visible in that sphere is going to be trying to attract attention, is going to be willing to dumb down their presentation and their product. So I extricated myself. You're sort of morally bound to do so and wait for the paradigm to shift. And I play shows, you know, yes. We're on a stage, but the stage facilitates the listening process. It's not to be looked at. And this is what music is. This is what musicians are. We're dorks. We are not performers. You can look at us if you want, but we're not performing.
That is such a truth. Such a true statement. It really is. You've touched on a couple of things I wanted to talk about anyway. And one is women in rock and roll. And two is fashion. Let's start with women in rock and roll, because it's something which you have been very open about and you've said what you think over the years. And I'm just thinking right now with the Me Too movement and things that have happened in the last couple of years. Let me get a take from you on where things stand from your perspective today about women in rock and roll and just women in society.
There's just no difference between men and women. This is the problem.
Yeah.
So the women that buy into there being a difference are going to begin looking for their weakness to resonate in that realm.
Yeah.
How do I solve this problem? If you tell half a populace that the other half has all the resources and they have to kiss up to them in order to keep their children safe, a lot of them are going to do it. And how they do it is exaggerated by an industry like the music business. It's a sadness for me that there are so many, it's like a John May Ramsey infantilization, but silly cartoon, everything is wrong with it. And you can see the trickle down response to, oh, all right, well then Dark Poet or the pseudo intelligence, it's all cartoon.
Yeah.
None of it is reflecting anyone you actually know. And so it's just as dangerous. It's even more insidious when it isn't as obvious as a children's beauty pageant version of femaleness. And think about the women that you know. Some of them have a similar sort of weakness. And yeah, it will mess with you to be someone who has to draw a different face on before they leave the house.
Yes.
Someone who has to wear shoes they can't walk in order to be considered lovable. These are problems. And to display them in something that's using sound and calling it music is an insult that we can turn away from. It's no longer safe to be digging this same pit for women generation after generation and then pushing little girls into it. They're born humans. They know.
Mm. Yes.
And they're perverted by this twisted take on their gender, which is obviously as superficial as race.
Yes. I love talking to you. I love listening to you.
I think I'm doing all the talking.
No, that's what it's about. That's what it's about, Chris. I'm talking to Kristen Hirsch. And what a great conversation. Your new album, I want to talk about, there's so much I want to talk about with you. You touched on fashion just now, and I want to focus in on that, and I'll explain that in a moment. But let's play another cut from your new album. There's a cut that I really like, and it's cut number one. It's called No Shade in Shadow. This is Kristen Hirsch from her new album. It's called Possible Dust Clouds. This is Life Elsewhere.
Yeah.
to the best show on radio about art, media, and culture. Life Elsewhere with Norman B. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with the gasoline. Ooh,
ooh. If you're just joining us, my guest is Kristen Hirsch. Her new album is called Possible Dust Clouds. That track is called No Shade in Shadow. I want to get into talking about this album and the making of it and everything you've got to say about it. But before we get to that, you mentioned the word again. I'm sort of picking up and listening carefully to what you're saying. You said about fashion in music, and you discovering that when you got into music, into being performing as an entertainer. I was going back through your catalogue and looking at some of your videos over the years, and I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, I wonder if you, Kristen Hirsch, looking back now, remembered how many times you changed your haircut and the pose that you had to get into for the different videos. Your thoughts?
It was amazing. If you sit down and talk to a publicist, you know, you think, I'm at work today and I have to be good at my job. Yeah. Someone sits you down and says, all right, hair. What are you supposed to think?
Yeah.
All I thought about was music, so I let them do whatever they wanted. It's only recently that I realized that stepping away from the industry wasn't enough. I had only said, all right, choices. You know, this is not for me. I am actually a musician, and I'm a feminist, so I will not choose this path. It's just in the last few years I thought, why leave the music industry in their hands? I really believe this is damaging. It's not harmless to treat anyone this way, including men.
Yeah.
So imagine we just tweaked the equation to remove this idea that flirting should be associated with music from either gender. Mm. How bizarre is it that in order to sell a song, you're expected to imply that you will sleep with thousands of strangers. Everyone should be insulted by that.
What?
Yes. Everyone should be insulted by every move you make to imply that you're going to sleep with anyone except the person you love. And now listen to music.
Yes.
And just take that out. What are you left with? Isn't that the hair?
Yeah.
And the people who are willing to let fashion dictate any of their life moves, you're going to realize those are not musicians. And as a listener, you deserve better. So look away. Find music. And if you can't find music that is not insulting, that is not manipulative, that is not coming on to you falsely, then yeah, play your own music. And don't lie.
Yeah. Well said. Let's now focus in. I want to we're going to talk about all kinds of things, but I want to talk about your album, Possible Dust Clouds. Love the title. Talk to me about putting this album together.
It does imply this idea of chaos and dust settling as a unique process, and to me, that's how a live show feels. It doesn't feel like a live recording, which is often just a poor recording.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't sound good. And the musicians are uncomfortable and the sounds aren't great. But if you're at a show and you're moved by the group high and the sound is good, it's very active and it's very loose, even with a tight band, because of the way sound moves across the room. Literally, it's bouncing. And as you move through the room, there's a bit of a Doppler effect. There's some swimminess in the lows. And it's this ever-changing chaos of noise that is driven by enthusiasm rather than violence. So this is a production technique that I wanted to bring about for this stuff, which is essentially kind of fun. Mm. The F word, you know?
Yeah.
It's positive chaos, and yet it's very intense. And I know from experience that sometimes when I'm yelling, people will hear it as upset. I don't know if that's sexist or not. It's not really my place to say, but it's intensity for me. I always felt it was very celebratory, and I wanted to make sure this sound reflected the celebratory nature of that intensity. And so when I could, I would make sure everything that went down was loose around the full sonic spectrum. The highs and the lows can be all over the place as long as the song body and the center of the piece is very solid. And oddly, it still wasn't enough. I'd be moving kick patterns around to make it sound looser. And the one thing that pulled off that sound of possible death clouds to me, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but it was a dulcimer.
A dulcimer.
A dulcimer. It sounds like, I don't know, that'd be the opposite of somebody who would ride a donkey barefoot, but sort of like, there's like a little Venn diagram where my mountain roots come out. And if you play a dulcimer out of time and out of tune, which I do because I'm not a dulcimer player, it would create that sound of being at a live event where there's this hammering, like a happy hammering that is just all over the place. So whenever a song would lose its momentum for a minute, I'd be like, all right, I'm putting the dulcimer down and I'm going to play it really fast. And that makes it sound like a party. In the meantime, I had friends stopping by the studio, and if they were musicians, I'd make them play. So I have a handful of friends playing on the record too. One of them is my son, Wyatt True, plays drums on the song Breathe In. And my boyfriend plays bass. So it's a little family event, this song. And I think that's the one song that got away without needing any dulcimer. Like, my family has enough chaos in it without badly played dulcimer.
Let me ask you about your voice, because I've always found your voice to be, I love your voice. I thought it's always been, to me, just such an interesting voice, because you can go from being very, very, as we talked about earlier on, very raw, to being very, and I hope you don't misunderstand me when I say this, to being very melodic. You seem to have this range that you can conjure up, and you seem to have done this over a period of time. On the latest album, I feel, and I don't know, you let me know, but you seem to be in complete control of how you want to sound. It seems to me that you're very deliberate in how your voice sounds on this album.
Yeah, I want it to be right. So deliberate is a nice way of putting it, and maybe too kind. I'm so raw that I'm in response to every measure.
Yeah.
As a vocalist, it has to be treated like an instrument. And it's an instrument that could lie, that could be hungover, that could be sick. So you have to be really careful with how open you are and how responsive. And I know this is embarrassing to admit, but I can end up in tears. I'm in the studio with Throwing Muses right now, and yesterday a song made me vomit because it was so intense. It feels like a perforation of your viscera, and obviously there's a psychological element to it. So in order to tell the truth, it sounds goofy, but it's risky. And if I'm not deliberate, if I'm not in control of this instrument, it could falter. Screaming in tune is not the same as just yelling and falling apart. You need some balls.
Yes.
You need it to be a very strong instrument, or you could lapse into, I'm going to say, lying, and I don't mean that in like you're being evil, but
no, yeah,
it's just not telling the truth. You have to be ready to tell the truth at every single juncture, and it's not always an impressive truth. A lot of this is kind of embarrassing.
I love your explanation there. You know, as you're saying that to me, I'm thinking about listening to your music, particularly to this album, to the new album. And I'm wondering whether you have a preference, whether people listen on headphones or just listening just as it's playing in the car or whatever. It almost sounds like a kind of stupid question in some respects, but I just wondered if you have a preference.
Oh, that's really interesting, actually. I don't think any of my listeners play it in the background. It's just not in keeping with the nature of this stuff.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Apparently, that when I was on Warner Brothers before I bought us out of our contract with my first solo record, there was a team of people whose job it was to get my music played in movies and on TV. And they said it was impossible because people pay attention to it. People listen to it. Mm. It's like, wait a minute. People are supposed to listen to music? And they said, oh, no, filmmakers hate that. You know, they don't want music anyone would listen to.
Yeah.
But that and the fact that I couldn't work with a publicist once, essentially kicked out of her office because I had no identifiable demographic. They had just previewed my show in New York, and I think it was the Village Voice, and it said, go to the show if only to see the bizarre cross-section of humanity that will be there. And she said, you're just across the board. There's no way I can work with you. It's like, so you remove the superficial aspects of a listener, and then you can't work with the musician anymore.
I would take that as a compliment. So, I think so.
Me too. Yeah. I thought, okay, this is why I'm not here. You're just making this decision so much easier. Yeah, there's music that you're supposed to listen to. And then, you know, I like to play music in the background, I guess, but not if it demands focus.
Yes.
You know. And apparently this does. So, car's okay. Headphones are okay. But I've never heard of anyone just putting it on.
Putting it on in the background, right. What's the process? What's the process for Kristen Hirsch in writing a song?
I used to be that I just heard them. Like as if the neighbors were playing one of my records that I hadn't heard yet. And I would feel seizure-y. People could feel it on my skin. They would say, oh, you have a song. And I would start to hear it. And yeah, I'm not proud of this. It was strange. I don't really like strangeness. But I would, we usually start about 4 in the morning, and by the time the sun came up, I'd have another song that I had figured out. And I just said, well, I'm just copying them down. I don't really know what they are. But it was a car accident that allowed me to hear these more clearly when I was a teenager. And so for a couple decades, that was my process. And it's not that unusual. There are a lot of people who have concussions and then begin to hear music, but as it turned out, I was treated for PTSD a couple of years ago, and it revealed an alternate personality, and that dissociation is what the music was. This part of me had split off, and it had been writing songs all this time that I assumed weren't me. But it was me. It was just a part of me that had lived through traumas I couldn't face. And the integration process is a cure for both PTSD and dissociation. So while it was never a mental illness, I no longer experience either. So my songs just are now. I can sit down, grab a guitar in the practice space in the studio, and there it is. I don't think that's any less strange than hearing it. And I'm still getting used to it, and it's definitely freaking out the people I work with a little. But music is unusual. It's spiritual, and so, yeah, it's a little weird. But, you know, so is the fact that we make people. You're a parent. You know, the children walk around and I'm amazed, and the songs walk around and I'm amazed. It's the same thing. I'm just sort of putting on sweaters and pouring cereal and listening to what they have to say all around.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you mentioned post-traumatic stress disorder. We did a program about that just recently, and I think it's a topic, an area that it's not talked about enough. And I think I'm so pleased that you mentioned that and brought that into the conversation. I now want to talk about one word, and that's happy, and what makes you happy. Before we get to that, I'm going to play another cut. So this will give you time to think about it. We're going to play another cut.
Okay.
This is the one you just mentioned. We're going to play Breathe In. This is Kristen Hirsch on Life Elsewhere.
Breathe in, because breathe in is what you do.
You are listening to Life Elsewhere with Norman B. You can learn more about this program at lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O.
My guest is Kristen Hirsch, and it's such a delight to talk with you, Kristen. It really is such a pleasure. The new album is called Possible Dust Clouds, and that track was called Breathe In. So I've given you a couple of moments there to think about a word that I'd like to talk about, and that is happy. Then I'm going to sort of add to that, what makes you happy?
I just am happy. Is that a bad answer?
No, because you sound happy to me.
People are so disappointed when they meet me and see how happy I am.
Well, this is the reason I'm asking you, because when we first, before we started recording, you and I had a little sort of preamble, and you just, to me, the smile was coming through the phone, and I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, it's so wonderful to be talking to a happy person. So that's why I'm asking you the question.
Lovely.
Yeah. So that's why I'm asking you.
I know a lot of people would like me to not be so happy. But I don't see it as less intelligent or less intense. I don't know whatever started that. I wouldn't want to be mopey. I have a lot to be grateful for. I'm not, life hasn't been easy.
Yeah.
You know, it's not ease that I'm grateful for, but like everybody that you enjoy being with, life hits pretty hard and in both directions.
Yes. You know, you said something a little while ago about being a parent. And again, you and I talked about this before we started recording. And it's something I wanted to talk to you about anyway, because being a parent, I know for me, changed me a great deal. For you, you had your first child when you were quite young, and you've got four boys. Being a parent is an incredible thing. It's an incredible life-changing thing. But I'd like to hear from Kristen Hirsch. How did being a parent change you, if it did change you?
I don't know. I've been a parent since before I was an adult. So I got that amazing life lesson, that instantaneous realization that you are not the story, which is such a huge relief. What a wonderful gift that is, to realize, we're about giving. It's a light. It's an unburdening. And yeah, like everything else, it's not easy. I haven't slept in 30 years or something. But they're my heroes. These four boys are, you know, my best friends and my heroes. They're creatures.
Yeah.
And they really sent home the message that we are animals, that our animal nature, though cerebral, is intact and valid and healthy. It's that midsection of ego that is a learned response, and that sort of pushed to the forefront by things like marketing and consumerism and boring stuff that makes it difficult for us to parse value and substance from what is sold to us. But when you're confronted with a human who has no evidence of that, you can no longer stomach lies.
Yes.
Probably the greatest gift that kids give you is you can't stomach lying anymore.
Oh, gosh, I know all about that. I've got a question.
I know you do. We all do.
I've got a question for you. You've done so much. You've recorded so much. You've been on the road so much. And as you said, life has its ups and downs. Is there anything over your career that you haven't done that you would dearly like to do?
I don't know if I would trust myself to come up with it.
Ah.
Serendipity is a good odd. It's a good together, and it has served me well. I don't think I've planned any of this, and I don't think I realized it until just now. Is that bad?
No, I think that's beautiful. That's wonderful. How wonderful to be able to have a life where it is serendipitous. I think just fantastic. I got another question for you, which sort of leads on from that. And we sort of skirted around this, and your songs certainly approach this subject, and it's a four-letter word, love. What does Kristen Hirsch think about love?
It I would never have tried to understand it before now. I was only half a person until a couple of years ago. And I just found the love of my life that I've known my whole life. And I'm watching my kids step off into manhood and realizing it was the whole thing. And now I'm crying.
Oh, yes.
The whole thing was all about this sort of effort of will that might not always be free, but the soft part of us that embraces chaos within that will, that's the serendipity, and that's love, that softness, that open will is life living itself. And yes. Yeah, what better word than love?
Yes. Oh, gosh. We could go on about love for some time. I think we really do. You know, you've got...
You made me cry. Oh, somebody just... made me cry.
I'm really pleased and I'm sorry at the same time. You've got four boys. You've got four boys, but you're a very proud feminist. And I'm just wondering whether having four boys... Have you ever thought about this, about what it would have been like to have four girls?
I would assume no different, because I can't help that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that I have four straight white males, and, you know, I certainly would... It would never occur to me to call them that. I don't see men and women as being particularly different. Maybe some of us have suffered from the mistakes of sexist individuals, but I don't really know any of them either. It's just kind of,
yes.
You see the cultural trickle down.
Sure.
But as humans, I have no reason to think that race or gender would interfere with character. It certainly doesn't help us predict behavior in any way. So it's probably better for me that I did have four sons.
Yes.
Just in case I forgot that. They weren't going to let me forget that.
They weren't going to let you. Yeah. Kristen, unfortunately, by the time we've put the music in, we're going to be up to around about 60 minutes of talking with you.
Look at us go!
I
How
know.
Cool.
I could talk to you for hours on end. There's so many things to talk to you about. Before we go, I'd like you to choose a piece of music. It could be from the new album or any piece of music, maybe from somebody else, whatever you'd like. We'd just like you, Kristen Hirsch, to choose a piece of music so we can close out the interview.
Do you mind if I play something from 50 Foot Wave, my noise rock band?
No, absolutely not. You choose it, we'll play it. Yeah.
This is like my secret band. You
know, yes,
you're supposed to be driven to you sell records, right? But
right.
Yeah, obviously I'm not, or I would have been trying harder. And 50 Foot Wave is my secret, my perfect quiet secret band. That's the loudest thing I've ever done. The drummer from 50 Foot Wave is touring Possible Death Clouds, and the bass player is my bass player from Soaring Muses. So it's keeping it in the
family. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so our last record is called Bath White, and if you can find the title track, it's I'm going to say it's sweet, but maybe you won't think that. I don't know. You tell me.
I will absolutely certainly tell you. Kristen Hirsch, it has been an absolute delight talking to you. Maybe we can get you back on again and we can just talk about all kinds of things, because I think there's so...
I would love that.
Yeah.
And I'll try to step away from the barn.
No, the barn's fantastic. Don't worry about the barn. It's been a delight talking to you. You keep on smiling because it's coming through and being happy like that. I think you've made a lot of people happy just by this conversation. Good luck.
You take care, sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Good luck with the new album, Possible Dust Clouds. And yeah, let's try and talk again. We have been talking to Kristen Hirsch right here at Life Elsewhere. Kristen Hirsch, thank you so much for joining us.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You know, seriously, I could talk to Kristen Hirsch for hours and hours. For the past 60 minutes, Kristen Hirsch has been my guest. And the last cut we heard was Bath White from the album of the same name, Christian's other musical project, 50 Foot Wave. I want to say a big thank you to Miss Hirsch. What a delightful guest. And a big thank you to you for listening. To hear this show again, you have many options. Go to our affiliate stations, all listed at lifeelsewhere.co, or you can go to NPR1, Apple Podcasts, and Mixcloud. And you know, your feedback is really important. Let me know what you think of the show by sending me a few words. In a moment, the announcer lady will give you my email address. So make sure you're ready to jot it down. Till next time, be well, be good, and you know, it really doesn't cost anything. Be nice. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Life Elsewhere, created and hosted by Norman B. Life Elsewhere is written and produced by Norman B. Guest booking and additional research by Stephanie Lane. Behind the scenes assistance by James Van, Bruce Goodman, and Allison Klein. We love to hear what you think about Life Elsewhere. Send your questions, queries, and comments to info@lifeelsewhere.co. That's C-O. Life Elsewhere is produced at the studios of WMNF Tampa.